Welcome to the Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
Welcome back, everybody. Man, it's great to be with you for another week of Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. I hope everybody's doing great out there. Hope you're enjoying this winter. Northeast, we've been getting some snow, which is nice. I mean, last year we didn't get any. Outside of having to shovel the driveway, it's been a lot of fun hanging with the kid and playing in the snow, doing a little sledding here and there. It's great to see the kids out at the parks and all that kind of stuff. You know, with all COVID going on around the whole country and around the whole world, it's great to see kids playing in parks again. So, you know, maybe that's a sign of things to come, that we'll be back in action soon, back doing what we love to do, which is get outdoors, get together, drink a couple cold beers around a campfire. I know that would make me damn happy to share a couple beers with some friends around a campfire very, very soon. So, but what do we got for you this week, man? This one is for all the music and art lovers out there. We have the founder of CreativeVets, okay? This is an organization that is fostering self-expression for the veteran community, especially veterans battling PTS, battling some type of a disability, or any type of a trauma that they kind of went through during their service. And CreativeVets is really just giving them an outlet for that and helping them kind of unfold that a little bit and, you know, creating a community where they can talk to other veterans that are doing it through songwriting and, you know, sculpture or painting or whatever the case may be. They are just an awesome organization. Richard, who's the founder, was just so much fun to talk to. He's such an interesting guy. And I mean, his story is amazing. And I don't want to ruin it for you, so I'm going to leave him to tell it because it's going to blow your mind. Let me tell you that much. But we're really going to have a good time this week talking to him. So besides that, we're still training for the half marathon. It's going to be the Murph Around the Lake here on Long Island. They're going to have two different versions of that this year, it looks like. They're shooting to do a virtual, which will open it up to the entire country. It'll open it up to people that maybe can't be there on event day. And then, obviously, they're going to try, hopefully with things improving with the COVID situation, to actually have an in-person run and do the run around the lake, which will be a half marathon. I am just continuing my training to be ready for it. My cardiologist is happy with my progression and has kind of given me the okay to do this. So barring any setbacks health-wise, I'm going to be out there on race day running my ass off. So I hope you guys will be out there too. There's information if you go to the Suffolk Veteran Run Series, their website. There's a link to go to the run around the lake, the Murph around the lake. So head on over there to that website to get any information on that run. As far as our run, like I said, I've been in contact multiple times with One More Wave. We are rocking. We are trying to figure out all the details to make this an awesome event, to raise money and hopefully outfit a rider for them, and really soup to nuts on that one. Have everything that that disabled veteran needs to get in the water and surf. So that is the goal. That's what we're sticking with. We're still looking at probably June, July timeframe, depending on things, you know, and how much time we need to make this a success and actually have an in-person event here on Long Island. So there'll also be a virtual option so that everybody can do it across the country. And hell, around the world, we'd like to get everybody involved in this. The more people we get, the more money we can raise and really help out a disabled vet enjoy the sport of surfing and the therapy that goes along with it. And if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to our interview that we did with One More Wave. Those guys were awesome, and you'll instantly realize why I chose them as the organization that the money's going to go to. I just had to. You know, they hit me right up, and I was hooked from the moment I started talking to those guys. So we got that going on. Besides that, please follow us on Instagram. That's where most of our information goes out. We still have the Facebook page. We always put stuff out on that as well, but Instagram is kind of my go-to. It's my favorite platform to put stuff out, little videos, clips, memes, stupid stuff, good information. Whatever I do, it's usually on Instagram first, but we also have the Facebook page, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Again, the Instagram at Bulletproof Veteran. Twitter, not as much stuff going out on Twitter, but hey, it's there. Bulletproof_vet. Anytime we do a video for the episodes, that will be up on YouTube and Rumble. So check that out. We have a new podcast platform that we're part of called Verbal. They're kind of new. I think they only just launched in November, and we're up there as well. So if you are looking for a new place to get your podcast and listen to your audio, head on over and check them out. They seem pretty cool. They got playlists. They got all sorts of old school radio on there. Really looks like a great new platform if you're looking to get away from the normal Apple or Google or whatever the case may be. So head on over to Verbal. Check us out on there. Besides that, all information is always on the website, bulletproofveteran.com. And you can send show ideas to bulletproofveteran@gmail.com. Also, any kind of criticism, anything like that, please send it on my way. I will always listen to it and try to improve the show the best that I can. Please subscribe where you can, leave comments, reviews. It's the best way to help out the show. Each comment, each review just bumps us up the charts, helps us get those great guests that give you guys the best information possible. And speaking of information, without further ado, let's get to this week's interview. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. I'm really excited this week because we're going to be getting into some music. We're going to be getting into some art. We're going to have a good time. I hope everybody's going to enjoy the information because this week we have on former Marine. Actually, I won't say former because all Marines are Marines for life. So yep. Marine Richard Casper, he's the founder of Creative Vets. Now, you might ask, well, what is that? Okay, and basically it's giving a way for veterans who have dealt with some trauma to kind of work through that PTS or their disability or, you know, kind of reemerging into their family life and kind of reconnecting with, you know, normalcy when they come home. And they're doing that through song, through arts, through creative writing. All these different modalities that really can help a person deal with whatever they got going on. And they're also showing how other veterans just listening to the songs created during the program or the artwork that is created during the program helps just veterans that are engaged with it. So, Richard, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Awesome, man. Well, as we usually do on the show, I'd love to just hear about you. You have a very, very interesting past. And I say that because not many people can say that they encountered four IEDs in 4 months.
Yeah, it was, and three of them were within barely a month and a half.
Yeah, that's a quick way to introduce yourself to a lot of unfortunate circumstances. But please tell me a little bit about yourself from the beginning.
Oh yeah, for sure. And always people said about that was I was unlucky. And I was like, man, I'm pretty lucky because
no, you're doing okay. So man. Many,
yeah. And especially directly, it wasn't like I've talked to veterans who were like, I was hit by like 16 and I talked to them about it. And they were like, no, the truck in front of me, I count that one. I'm like, no, I mean, I was directly impacted by each one. My Humvee was, but yeah, so I'm originally from a very small town in Illinois. It was 1,100 people in my whole town and 22 kids in my graduating class. So I come from a place where art and music are not things. Like they're things that you listen to and art's something that you hear about, but they're not teaching it fully in the schools. I mean, they're doing kind of paint by number stuff. And you know, we didn't have a kiln there. We didn't have any kind of thing that would really be like, oh, I'm going to be an artist. I didn't know it was acceptable. I didn't think it was acceptable. And I joined the Marine Corps in 2003, right out of high school. Just like a lot of veterans that started to serve in that time, 9/11 happened, I was already knew I was going to pursue military. I didn't know where I was going, what I was going to do, what my job would be. But after 9/11, I knew I wanted to go to Marine Corps and infantry. I want to be the first person overseas. I want to stop whatever's happening. And I just wanted to be over there. So 2 weeks out of high school, after I graduated, I went to Marine Corps boot camp. While I was at boot camp, I got selected as a special tester. And so I didn't know what that was. They came in, had my name on a list. And I'm like, you don't want to be on list in the Marine Corps. So I was already pretty freaked out. I actually thought that they thought I was dumb, because in high school, when I knew I was going to be a Marine, all that state standardized testing, I legitimately just went C, 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 C. I went straight down the middle.
Why waste your time?
Yeah.
You already know. You knew what you were doing.
I'm going to the Marine Corps. I don't need college. I'm just whatever. I'm not going to waste my time with this. And so when they call me out as a special tester, I'm like, oh crap, I should have actually did these tests. I'm special. But that was actually quite the opposite. So 2 months go by and we went back and forth. Every time we go into these rooms and talk to these people, psychiatrists and psychologists and doctors and just individuals, every time there's less and less of us. And it was super weird. It was like one of those apples and oranges thing. Like, what type of person are you? Do you talk in your sleep? Have you done this? So just leading it all the way up until there's only about maybe 30 of us. And then we have to do one-on-one conversations with like a gunny or a first sergeant as like an introduction. But right before that, they tell us why we're doing this whole thing. So all of a sudden they drop this big old bomb on us saying, hey, you all have been selected to guard the president of the United States, either at Camp David or White House Communications through this WACA. And we were just all, if we weren't nervous enough as little privates going to speak to these gunnies and first sergeants, like actual interview style, they drop that on us. And I'm just freaking out. I legit am like, am I going to be able to go in here and say this stuff? Because it was weird. It was a weird feeling thinking I was going to go to war and now getting thrown to this and thinking I might actually go here when my mind is going this way. Mm-hmm. And it was a weird thing, because it was kind of happy, kind of sad, kind of just all over the place. And I go through it and I ended up being one of the people selected. And it's a crazy opportunity, so I couldn't pass it up. But what happened was, I still had to go through infantry training like normal. So three months at boot camp, then 2 months at School of Infantry in Pendleton. And then I went to Security Force School rather than just going to the fleet. And so I did 2 months at Security Force School while I learned how to be like pretty much a cop. And then I went to DC. And so you sit in DC at the 8th and I Barracks until your clearance goes through. Because as you think, if you're guarding the President of the United States with a loaded weapon, you have to have a pretty high clearance.
Yes, sir.
And so they called us Yankee White Marines because that was the clearance we got. Yep. So a lot of people don't know this, but you can Google it because it sounds super fake, like super secret squirrel stuff. But
I was stationed at Andrews. So Yankee White, I know it very well.
Yep. Yankee White Category 1 is what the president has. Yankee White Category 2 is what we had. Then there's a Yankee White Category 3, and then it's top secret. So when I say I'm like two above top secret, that's Yankee White Category 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it took about 11 months for that clearance to go through. And then once it went through, they give you the opportunity to pick where you want to go. And because I'm a country boy from a farm town, I said Camp David, because I heard stories that you're so much closer to the president, like when they come up and it's in the country and we're up in the mountains. And I was like, that's perfect. I don't want to go to Boeing. I think it was Boeing Air Force Base or Andrews Air Force Base or something, mm-hmm. and just chill there. I didn't want to do that. So I'm like, no, send me to the mountains. And that's where I went. Spent about 14 months there. After about 14 months is when they said I kind of was up with my tour duty up there, but they were kind of low on Marines. So the first sergeant asked me if I wanted to stay. And I knew that at that point I was going to get out of the Marine Corps. And I knew if I stayed up there, I would never go overseas. So I said, you know, all due respect, I need to go serve. I need to go to the next unit overseas so I can make it overseas. So then I get shipped out to 2-7, and it's in 29 Palms, California. And I'm doing this whole workup to go to war with this line company. It was 2-7 Fox. And then they hit me with the, hey, Richard, you don't actually meet our deployment. We leave January of 2007. You get out in June of 2007. So we'll still be in Iraq when you're supposed to get out. And I'm like, well, what the crap? I was like, is anybody else going over soon? And they said, well, First Tanks just had a boot drop and they have no senior leadership in their tow platoon. So if you want to go over there, we're taking volunteers, but we're also volunteering like 18 other people. And I was like, no, sign me up. Me and my other buddy from that came from Camp David both signed up for it. So we get sent over to first tanks, and now we're doing a workup with the tow unit. Mm-hmm. And we know nothing about Humvees and nothing about, you know, tow systems, but we're just there. And then they're like, hey, Richard, you don't make deployment with us either, because we get back supposed to get back in June or May. And they said that because of my timing, I wouldn't be able to go through a corporal's or like taps, steps and taps and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And I said, well, can I just extend for like a month or something, or 6 months? And they're like, yeah. I was like, oh, I did. If I would have known that, I would have stayed with 2.7. I had no idea.
Could you use this extend. Like a month ago? You could have told me this.
Yeah, because you could legitimately just extend for 1 month. I had no idea you could do that. I thought you'd have to re-up. So I said, okay, one more month, I'll do that if that's what gets me there. They still made me do seps and taps before I even went to war. So it was so weird that I go overseas to Fallujah and then come back and just check out the Marine Corps. I completely forgot everything anyways. But so fast forward, now I'm overseas in Iraq, and I'm the lead vehicle commander of a truck. And my gunner was shot and killed beside me. And then my Humvee was blown up 4 times within that first 4 months. The one in November that hit me, it tore cartilage in my chest. So what happened was the overpressure, the bomb was so big that the overpressure in the cabin went down my throat, expanded my lungs to the point where it tore cartilage. And then so it took about a month off. And then like January 2nd, January 17th, and February 14th were the next three that hit me. And so by that last one, I was considered unfit for duty. My brain was too injured. I couldn't go outside the wire anymore. But they didn't send me home. I just stayed in Iraq as like a COG of Camp Grizzly or Camp Bellawood. They mm-hmm. changed names when I was there, and I forget which one was first, but I pretty much helping, like, picking up piss bottles and helping people fill sandbags at the chow hall while I was waiting for our unit to go home. But that time's important to know about, because after that brain injury, I didn't know I had a brain injury. I was seen by the corpsman, and they're like, hey, you're unfit for duty. That's about it. And then I'm sitting here not using my brain at all, because I am legitimately just going to clean up. They tell me little tasks. I go do it. Okay. And now it's time to go home. So this is like 3 or 4 months later after my injury. Fly back home, touchdown, start checking out of the Marine Corps. And they're like, do you need to see medical or anything before you leave? I was like, no, I don't think so. You never sent me to medical when I was over there. So why go now? And so I just get out of the Marine Corps not knowing I have any issues, honestly. And the big part of not knowing was because, again, I didn't have to use my brain. And I wasn't thinking that way, though.
Right.
I was like, these headaches will go away. I've had them for like a month straight, but they're getting slowly better and better. So it's probably just going to go away. So now I transition back home. I take about 6 months off, take my Harley to Sturgis, go live life a little bit again, not use my brain at all, just normal daily stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, now it's time to settle back into, just get back in the saddle. Let's do something awesome. I'm gonna go to a community college for about 2 years and go to a state college for the rest, get a degree in business, entrepreneurship, something that might excite me going down the road. And get into college, and I start, for one, I fail my very first class, and I'm not that dumb. So I'm like, this is weird. And then I start getting sick before class and even in class. And then anytime I had to speak in front of anybody or even present, I would physically get sick, like throw up.
Now,
sick,
this is an anxiety. This is you're having a physical reaction to thought.
Yeah. I mean, it is like, and what they said was, is that it's anticipation anxiety. So okay. It was just the thought of me being the center of attention, which was so weird because I was prom king and class clown in high school. And then I joined the Marine Corps. And I was like class clown, you know, right, for the Marine Corps, or at least my platoon. Like I brought a mullet wig and like fake tattoo sleeves to Iraq with me. Like who does that? And so I was so used to being that person, that personality. And now I'm like sitting outside of these classrooms, afraid to go in, afraid that people are going to look at me. And I had to carry around, I don't have to do this anymore. It's just here, but I had to carry a bottle of water with me everywhere, because the moment I felt that anxiety, my mouth would go completely dry. I'd start dry heaving. And then I would physically have to go to the bathroom, throw up, or even diarrhea sometimes if I knew I had to give a speech or something. So completely not like me, having these crazy physical reactions to it, to where I almost gave up. If 0 was killing myself and 100 was me before war, I was in a 9. And honestly, it was my faith that just kept me going. And I didn't know what to do. I went to the VA and just said, hey, I'm definitely messed up from something. I don't know what it is. And that's when they diagnosed me with like PTSD and traumatic brain injury and a bunch of random stuff like tinnitus and degenerative disc disease and all those things. And so I'm sitting here thinking, like, I can't do anything anymore. I can't learn. They told me I can't learn new technical skills, and I have a short-term memory issue. I still get migraines all the time and headaches, and my body just felt beaten up and broken from obviously all the blasts. And I was starting to get like carpal tunnel, weird arthritis in my wrist. And I legitimately didn't know what I could do, but I've always been super optimistic. And I said, you know what? Screw this. I can't do business, but I just had an awesome career of guarding the president. I have a super awesome clearance. What if I could just push through this, get a super easy degree in whatever I can, and then I'll just fall back on like FBI, CIA, any of the three-digit agencies that can kind of recognize my service, saying, oh, he's a Marine and he guarded the president. He can be an agent. All I need is that degree. So honestly, I thought it was a cop-out. I just said, I'm just going to do art. I'm going to do an easy degree in art where people are all anxious and they don't want to talk to me anyways. I don't want to talk to them. And I'll just start this whole process of,
just like blend in,
how to draw and paint. And yeah, blend.
Yeah.
And so I start at this community college, start studying art. And something inside me kept drawing to this this photo that I took at my gunner. So every year I go to my gunner's grave in Houston, Texas. I fly out there, haven't missed a year. Since he died, I mean, I transitioned home. So that very first year I missed, but after that, I've never missed a year. I just fly out there and go visit his grave and his family because I had a lot of survivor guilt. And obviously around their family, I was afraid to even meet them. And that's a whole nother story that's pretty amazing. But my uncle took a photo of me at his grave. And so I'm in class and I don't want people to know my story, but I need to get something out. And I started just doing a drawing of that piece. And it was a chalk pastel. Everything was colored the way it's supposed to be. So my skin tone, my cami shorts, my like black Harley shirt or Marine Corps shirt, I forget what I was wearing. And then his headstone and then the roses that are on the headstone. All this is colored in on this big sheet. And I'm about to do the background. It's the last thing I have left to do that's completely white. And I'm going to do it green because grass. And the teacher comes up behind me and he knows I was injured because I had to tell him about my disabilities before class in case anything happened. He said, hey, Richard, I'm going to encourage you. And it's only a basic drawing class, so he didn't have to like throw this out there. But he said, hey, I'm going to encourage you to, instead of doing green like you're going to, I want you to do a color that just doesn't make sense to what grass would be. And if you do this, it's going to reflect the emotion that you feel about the situation. And when you put this up and you're not here, so this says in the gallery space, when an individual comes and looks at your piece, they're going to know that the artist that created this was also the subject of this because the color is going to tell them that. I thought that was super dumb and confusing. And I was like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but okay. And like a good Marine, I did everything red. The background was completely red, not really known why I did it. And one thing I didn't know about in the art world is that there's critiques and you were supposed to put your work up and the people are supposed to talk about it. So okay. The first time he's like, hey, everyone put your work up. And I do. He's like, Richard, you want to talk about your piece? I was like, well, hell no, I don't want to talk about a piece. And then he says, students, do you want to talk about Richard's piece? And they said, one at a time. They're like, hey, I think you put red in there because you're angry that your friend died. One was, I think you put red in there because you saw him die. You saw the blood. And I'm sitting here like, whoa, I didn't say anything. I just have this little photo of me at a grave. And they know that I was involved in the situation and that I saw him die. It's insane because they could have took anything from a guy at a grave,
of course,
but they understood it because of that color. It was like I was telling my story without telling my story. The one thing we're all afraid of is breaking down in front of people. And I was like, I didn't even have to break down. And for a split second, I felt connected to these 18, 19 year old kids who had no life experience. So it encouraged me. And I started diving in deep, like, what is this? And so my instructor told me about conceptual art, symbolism, and all this. So I go hard in the paint and I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure out what this is. And after about 2 years at the community college, I got my associate's degree. I was enrolled into the best art school in the country, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, where, you know, it's the Walt Disney, George O'Keefe. It's like number one art school. And I got in, I had to sell myself. And that's again, a whole nother story. We'd be here forever if I was telling you all these awesome stories, but I sold myself and I got into that school based off the idea that I wanted to show them instructors what it felt like to be blown up through art. And I wanted them to know what it was like to, like a loss of innocence, that feeling when someone's life gets taken from them. I wanted to share all this through art. And I was able to do that. And I was able to heal myself throughout that process. And along that same timeline, it's really hard to tell these stories right next to each other. Mm-hmm. But along that same timeline, I was doing creative writing and I was writing parodies of music because I still wanted to let people know that my gunner Luke Jepson lived. And I said, what if I had a song about him? Because I still broke down and cried if I told stories about him. I said, what if I had a song that I could just give to people? So they come up to me and say, tell me about your experience. I say, listen to the song. I walk away. They get to know about Luke's life. I get to not feel vulnerable and get angry and depressed and sad about telling the story. And then it's a huge win for everyone. So I start studying this whole process of songwriting. A friend of mine lent me his guitar. I taught myself on YouTube after he taught me a few chords. And so I was off and running. So by the time I graduated from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, I had already just met, like maybe a few months prior to that, a number one songwriter in Chicago who was playing a writer's round, just playing some of his hit songs. And I go up to him and I say, hey, I have so much going on in my head right now. I want to get a story about my experience out there. I just think all the songs I've written to this point suck because I'm not a professional. I think if I just come to you and tell you my story, you would help, like it'd be able to help. And he said, okay. He said, okay to me. He said, yeah, you just come down to Nashville and we'll set up a date and time. Here's my number. This guy, his name's Mark Irwin, and people could look him up, but he wrote Alan Jackson's first number one hit, Here in the Free World.
Oh, yeah.
But since then, he wrote Redneck Crazy. He wrote, I think, Neon Lights by Blake Shelton. He wrote Highway Don't Care, that Tim McGraw, Taylor Swift song. I mean, he has a bucket load now of number ones, and he said yes to me, a nobody, who just wanted to come tell my story. And I drove down, and I spent 3 hours with him, and at the end of it, I had a song and a half. Enough to where he was like, yeah, come back down and we'll finish the other song. And then while I come back up and I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, wow, that he was able to help me so much. And I didn't know those words would even come out of him when I said them. And I was like, what would this do for other veterans? And so I enlisted my buddy who's it's actually the song we're going to release this month. I said, hey, man, I know you hate telling your story because he's a single leg amputee with burns over 60% of his body from an incident in Iraq.
Wow.
So I know you hate telling your story, but what if I took you to Nashville and we wrote with a number one songwriter? Would you do that? And he's like, oh man, hell yeah. Like I'll do that. And so now I could already see the change. The perspective of telling his story and writing a song were so different, but we were actually telling his story through the song. So I was just super pumped. He was excited. So I start being the battle buddy and working with him on what do you need to say? What's that one thing you need to say? And he was talking about how, you know, people just don't understand that he would still go back in a heartbeat. And it's not to glorify war or anything. It was because he felt so comfortable over there because it's all he trained to do. Then when he was doing it, it was comfortable. So coming home is super uncomfortable to him. And he's like, if I could get that story out, I would love to. So we come down to Nashville. We're writing with a whole new group of people. It's a band called Blackjack Billy, where two of the writers wrote Love and Theft's Angel Eyes, which went number one. And so we're writing with them, and Jesse's telling the story. And I mean, the moment he heard the words come out of their mouth, so he's like, you know, when I came home, everyone said, man, you must feel so blessed that you're alive and you look so good, because they all heard the stories about him getting injured. And he was like, you know, they don't see the war when I close my eyes or how I have to crawl on the floor at 4 a.m. Low crawl because I can't put my leg on in time and I have to piss. And he's like, it's just the things that they don't see. And now here's these songwriters who already got a melody in their head because of what he's saying. And they say, what about something like this? Hey, boy, you looking good. You know, we're glad you're back. Man, I heard you got hurt real bad. And they're playing music to it. And his eyes just light up. He's like, and then this happened, and then this happened. So it became word vomit and excitement of telling the stories that he's never told before, because he heard them come out in such a beautiful poetic way that he was just, he didn't even know it was happening to him. So we ended with this phenomenal song that, again, we're going to be releasing, which is crazy because we wrote that in 2013. And I really wanted to launch this whole awareness campaign we're doing with the first song ever created by Creative Vets. And that's what gave me the momentum and the know-how to say that this works. If I could just bring more veterans to Nashville to help them tell their story, get away all the friction, if they can't afford it, we'll pay for their flights out here. If they need a battle buddy, I'll be that battle buddy. If they need the excitement to outweigh their anxiety and depression, we'll pair them with the number one writer. And that's exactly what we've done. No veteran has ever paid for any of our programs. And we've flown in veterans from 42 different states to Nashville to tell their story, because we don't want them to not have access to this.
Just because it's some money. Yeah.
Yeah. And on that same thing, what I really wanted to get veterans into was the arts. I just knew songwriting's a lot sexier. And of course, every veteran I've ever met has said they like music. Not every veteran I meet says they like art. Actually, it's a smaller percentage, way smaller percentage. So I knew instead of building the nonprofit on the arts, I was going to build it on the music so that I can get to the arts. Because I figured if I start with the arts, it may fail. We may not get enough veterans or enough funding to do it. So I start with the songwriting that first year. It was only 9 veterans, but again, we fly them out. We've even flown out at that first 9 a Native American Marine from the Foothill Tribes of Montana. He was in the Blackfeet Tribes. So it cost $2,000 just for his flight to Nashville because it was such a remote place.
Yeah.
He wrote a song called Warrior that is phenomenal about his heritage and his tribe and how he's going to war now. And it's a beautiful song. But that's how we started, was the music, and we've never stopped. And we went from writing back of this guy's house, like the Black Chick Billy guy, we're back of his house when we wrote that song, to fast forward today. And in March, before everything shut down, a Vietnam veteran flew to Nashville, wrote backstage at the Grand Ole Opry with Charlie Worsham. And so we have brought this to such a high level of excitement that I truly believe no veteran would turn down this opportunity to be flown to Nashville to write backstage at the Opry, because we have their partnership with them, and then write with a number one songwriter or even artist. Like, we have so many awesome artists that have helped us. We have some artists I can't even talk about that are doing writes here in the future, big name artists. And it's just super exciting to see them embrace it, because they volunteer all their time, and then how many veterans come out for these programs. But I know I said a lot there, and it's a lot to unpack, and we could talk even more about the arts, but I'll leave it at that so you can ask any questions.
Yeah. Well, no, I love it, because it is a lot to unpack. But I think what you're doing is that important. And one of the things that you kind of were talking about there for a second, and I want to just ask you about it. So you guys are building this catalog of music now from all of these veterans. And you talk about how it's helped each veteran. Something that we talked about before the interview, how it helps the families of these veterans is also really important. It's something that I don't want to go unsaid, because there's a song about, the veteran wrote for his daughter and connecting with the daughter. And it could make you cry if you have a child. If you don't tear up during that, there's something wrong with the inside, because it's so powerful and it's so important that that daughter got to hear and relate a little bit more to what their father was going through. Can you speak a little bit to the relationship that Creative Vets has with the families as well?
Yeah, and so we let the veteran decide what they ultimately need to talk about and need to say. And I would say probably 40 or 50% of the rights are, they're just trying to find words to express their wife, their children, about what they went through, because we don't have the words for it. We can't, you know, I could talk about my brain injury all day and why I make certain choices I do, but even my wife never understood why buying a house was so easy for me or having a child was so easy for me. She always thought, well, why are you never scared? Do you not care about this? And then I had to totally reset and be like, oh, wait a minute. No. My thought process is, if I don't die after a decision, then it's no problem. Because I almost died so many times that all the decisions I'm going to make from now on, if it doesn't include that I have a chance of dying in it, then I'm not going to worry at all about it. Like, pretty relaxed. And then I saw how she saw it from me, and I said, oh yeah, I could see how you may feel like I'm being complacent, or that I don't feel like this is a legit thing, or I don't respect the house, or I'm not, you know, I don't care about our child, like that kind of process. I was like, I understand, but that's what this music does, is it brings out those words that we never thought we had. And it explains it in a way that will truly, and it has been, bridging that gap between the military civilian divide, but also the military veteran and their spouses or children. Because the song that we have right now that's released, we have one song that's released for the children, which is called Unbroken. And that was a dad, he has a daughter and a son. And he was just saying, hey, you know, I'm broken, because you see it. They physically see it. He's like, I'm broken, but I feel I'm broken when I'm with you. And we got to see him play that for his kids live when he streamed us to play it for him. And it was so beautiful. But there's a YouTube video, too, that we have up that we haven't technically released that song. But it was a guy who said, I was on deployment pretty much from my time my daughter was 7 to now she's 17. I want to write a song to her just saying hello, because I feel like I missed out on all the things that even the stuff you I want to miss out on, like first boyfriends. But he's like, but I should be there, and I want to write a song about that. So it's just beautiful. We have a song. A lot of people don't know it's a Creative Ed song called They Call Me Doc. It's on YouTube, about a Navy corpsman or Army medic. It is a corpsman that wrote it, but he wanted to be about all medics. And that song got played one time on Big D and Bubba. And we had a letter from a wife who said, hey, my husband is a Marine. When I was driving in today, I heard They Call Me Doc on the radio. I pulled over and I was bawling because my husband's a Marine and he never talks about his PTSD. And he's never been diagnosed, but I know he has it because he's a different person. So when I went home that night, I played him that song and then another song that was on your website. And he started telling me about things he went through in war he's never told me before. And that was because he related so much to that veteran of the song that he felt like he was in a safe place to open up. And at the end of the letter, she says, keep writing these songs because you helped save our marriage. And it's that powerful of songs, because we don't know until we hear someone else say it that we're not alone. We have a whole song. There's going to be a song that we're releasing for Vietnam Veterans Day that's called You're Not Alone. And it's just beautiful. It's some of these songs are inspirational. Some of are super sad and don't have any hope in them, mm-hmm. because we want the veteran to talk about what they're going through. And if there's no hope in their life, we're not going to beat around the bush and say there is, because then we're not going to actually treat them like they should be treated, like being like, hey, no, you are awesome. You shouldn't feel this way. And then have people wrap arms around them. Because if you put hope in the song, all of a sudden their friends are going to blow it off and be like, oh yeah, that was cool. But I saw you're doing good in the bridge. So that's cool. Instead of being all negative, then a friend could be like, dude, are you all right?
Right.
Do you need anything? Do you need me to come at you? So that's why I hate it sometimes when people will mention about negativity in our songs. I'm like, that's because it's saving this veteran's life and his family and friends are able to wrap their arms around him.
Yeah. They just give him a big hug and that's what he or she might need, you know?
Yeah. And the same thing with the arts, because we, at the end of our 3-week program, so we fully, just like the art or songwriting program here in Nashville, it's 4 days long and we pay for your flights, your food, your housing to Nashville. Mm-hmm. Obviously with COVID, we haven't flown anybody out here in over a year, but we've done some virtual rights. Our art program is 3 weeks long and it's fully accredited, and we pay for the tuition, housing, food for the veterans for all 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, they learn how to tell that story. Same thing through music. They just do it through art, through conceptual art. We teach them how to do that. At the end of the 3 weeks, they have a gallery showing of all their artwork, and they get to invite their family and friends. And there's this one vet, actually, it's this guy right here. I forget. I have photos of veterans hanging on the wall.
Very cool.
But his name's Bart, and he's just a phenomenal dude, fought in Desert Storm. And he said he had this reoccurring nightmare, and he was going to do an art piece about that. And he said his wife was coming, and he never sent her one photo of his piece because he wants to see if she could find it in the gallery, because there's about 13 pieces in the gallery space. And I still remember her walking through the door and just kind of like zooming around to all these art pieces and then seeing one and just breaking down and crying. And wow. I was like, that is so powerful that he's been able to articulate his dream so well and then recreate it, that she saw it and knew exactly what his piece was.
Wow.
And he said, and I brought him back to help instruct the course, because he's a big old boy. He's like 6'4", but just a Desert Storm veteran that you would never think would do art. And he learned it through our program. So I bring him back so other veterans could see that you don't have to be an artist to do it. And nonchalantly, he told me one day, he's like, you know, ever since I've been through this program, man, I used to have that reoccurring nightmare 7 days a week, sometimes 6 nights a week. Since your program, I probably only had it 3 times ever. And I'm just sitting here like, holy crap. He's like, yeah, be able to put it outside of me like that and have people see it, I think made him go away. That was huge for us.
Huge. Huge. When you think about all the people that are taking all sorts of medications and you know, listen, if you need to be on medication, be on your medication. I never would advocate to go against your doctors or anything like that. But I am an advocate for alternative ways to deal with what you're going through. And whether that's songwriting, art, you know, if it's creative writing, whatever it is, anything that you do that helps you is a positive. And if it helps you in a way that gets you off the medication, that's only good for your body too. So yeah. Kudos to you guys for just that one. I mean, if he's saying that, that's amazing. Speaking of your the galleries, just I want to tell people, If you want to see a virtual tour of those galleries, you can actually go to the Creative Vets website, and there are two galleries, one for USC and the other one for the Art Institute in Chicago, and you can actually take a 360 virtual tour on the website. So you can kind of get an idea of what Richard's talking about. Definitely head over there and take a look at that, because I was just kind of torn around it, and it's very cool to be able to, you know, especially with COVID, people aren't getting out. I'm not getting to San Diego anytime soon, but I can still see stuff, which is amazing. So
that's one of the few blessings that COVID actually brought, was the opportunity for us to expand into people's homes. And mm-hmm. like that, you may get a ton of veterans who would never go into an art space, but now you're saying this and they may be like, well, I'll go look at it. Then they're virtually walking around in this room and they see these pieces that they could reflect on and be like, whoa, this reminds me a lot of me. And then they might reach out for help. So it's a beautiful thing. The other thing that we've done to go back to our music is, I knew that veterans are stuck in their home, and you know, it's 20 suicides a day in the military veteran space, 14 don't actually seek help. So how do you get to those ones who don't even seek it, to get to them? And we know that music gets inside everybody's home. So we actually partnered with Amazon to the Alexa department. And I said, I want a saying for her to say, Alexa, play music by veterans. And I want it to play our music. Because my thought process was, when I came home, I was trying to connect with any other veteran. And I searched veteran music. I found this guy named Soldier Hard. I've never listened to rap like a day in my life. Never really wanted to. But he does military combat rap, and I just fell in love with it because it was so true and it hit me right in the heart. He's talking about Marines that have TBIs and suicide attempts and all these things, and I just found myself fully engaged in that music. So I was thinking, if any veteran comes home now and they're like, is there veteran music out there, Alexa, play me veteran music, and it says, here's a playlist from Creative Vets, and all of a sudden, like, well, that's a weird artist name, let me check them out. Then they search us and they find our website and they see that we're doing online streaming classes with number one songwriters about songwriting, or famous artists about art, and it's totally free, and they could dive in and have conversations with us. And then they see how impactful it could be. So they apply for one of our main programs, and then we're flying them out to Nashville or to the school there in Chicago or University of Southern California. And they're going through our art programs, and then they become mentors and help other veterans just continuously go into this, what I call your transition from your warrior brain to your artist brain. So you're still a warrior. You're just thinking differently about all these situations that happen to you. And that's all these songs do is we have veterans that have said, I've shot a kid in Iraq and I can't tell anybody about this. And when they come out here and they write a song about that, they send the song to everyone they know, because now it's a song. It's not their story. So it's completely remapping the way they think about that experience and the way the brain is operating. And it repurposes that negative memory into a positive one because they're sending it to everybody. And we've seen extremely successful results in veterans after, when they recall that experience, that they're more mild or happy because they have a song that they're thinking about rather than the actual experience. I'm just hoping, I can't wait for that day when veterans are just randomly finding us through our music that's out there, then applying for our programs.
Yeah. And it seems like it's just growing and growing. And, you know, when COVID does finally break up and you can start having people down in Nashville, that's going to be amazing. It really is. And I think the floodgates are probably going to open because you've done all this virtual stuff to build the community and to build awareness. You're starting these different kind of awareness programs. You have something coming up this month, February 20th, if I'm not mistaken. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So yeah, February 20th, we're releasing, so we already have about 12 songs that are out there to the world. So if you can go to our website, click on music, and it'll link you to some of it. But if you just search Creative Vets on Spotify or Amazon Music, wherever you listen to music, you'll see about, you know, it was one album, one EP we released, and now we're going to release a single every month. And so we have 12 songs that live out there right now, starting this month, February 20th. And that 20th is because the 20 veteran suicides, it's to do a big old awareness campaign. We're going to be releasing a song that we wrote with a veteran. Each month's going to be something different, but because this is the kickoff to the campaign, we're starting with that very first song we ever wrote, Until It Feels Like Home, that Jesse wrote about his story. Cause it's more of a, what is it, like a sentimental thing. It's saying, you know, we have a ton of awesome songs we could have released, but we're making a statement by being like first song ever created. And it just happens to be my birthday too, which is crazy.
Awesome.
I co-founded this thing and then I was a writer on there, and it was the first band that ever helped us to show that this is real and the first veteran to go through it. So what a perfect launching point to this new awareness campaign. Then after that month, every 20th, we're going to drop another song by a veteran. And then on special days like Vietnam Veterans Day, which is March 29th, a lot of people don't know that's a day. It started 2019 when it was signed into existence. Veterans Day and then 4th of July and September 11th, we'll be doing a bonus song. So all these songs are written by veterans for veterans or their families, and that they've given us permission to release. So just by streaming this music, even for free, royalties come back to Creative Vets to continuously bring veterans through our program, and they go to the veteran who wrote the song. So it's a huge win for everyone just by listening, because as we talked about earlier, veterans just listen to the song could relate and it can help them. And we have, it runs the gambit. So when you listen to the album, you said you found like two songs that you really engaged with.
Yeah.
So that's what I want. I don't need veterans to engage with every single song. I just want them to find that one song that they feel like is their song.
Yeah. Like I said, the Unbroken song got me right away, obviously, because my daughter and everything. That's you're going to get me almost every time. You throw a kid in there and you get the tearjerker. And, you know, you guys are in Nashville, so it's mostly country that I've heard so far, the stuff that I've listened to. Country is not my go-to, I'm going to be honest. I like a little bit here and there. Grew up listening to the Highwaymen. I liked Alan Jackson, a bunch of his songs. Brad Paisley, a few of them. Not, like I said, not usually on my playlist.
Yeah.
Now, do you kind of dictate, because you have artists lined up for these guys, that it's going to be a country song? Or does the vet get to choose and say, hey, listen, if you had a guy come in and say, listen, I want to do a metal song, are you able to support that, or has it become a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, we're almost, if you listen to Sunshine, which is on the album, it's completely blues and gospel.
Okay, I got to listen to that.
And that's because we had a veteran, African-American veteran from Cleveland, Mississippi, who said, hey, this is, I love soul. I love this type of music. And so I found a singer-songwriter who writes and sings that type of music. So yeah, it's a lot. What happened, what's kind of crazy is, even with you, if you're like, I love metal, and I set you up with a guy who writes rock to metal-ish, because it's hard to find really good metal that is going to actually help everyone else.
Right.
Because it is about you, but it's also about the people who listen to it.
Of course.
So if you're like, I want to write a song for my wife, she listens to Christian, but I'm going to write this metal song, you're probably not going to be able to articulate what you're trying to, if
might
you really
fall
want
short.
To go.
Might.
So when you come out here, we line you with artists that sing or write around that material. But it's insane when you first hear your song, just guitar vocals, it sometimes completely resets you to where you're like, I don't care what this sounds like as long as it sounds like that. So we had this, and just a quick story, we had an event in Minnesota, and we partner with a lot of nonprofits, and it's a nonprofit called Teed Up for the Troops. And if we ever get invited somewhere, I bring songwriters and just say, let's change a veteran's life. Let's write with them, tell their story. So I didn't know if we're going to write with a female or male veteran. So I brought a female and a male songwriter, just so whatever happens. And one of them actually does a lot of metal stuff too, but he's kind of like, he could do pop, metal, and rock and country. He's pretty awesome. And so we go up there, and the guy was very blunt when we first met him. He's like, you know, I don't like female voices on songs, so I'll probably go with whatever he's doing. I mean, he was like very front, and she's Canadian country artist. She's like, no, that's fine. I'm just here and I'll help write the song and stuff. And she starts singing, because as you write, you sing together and you're like going back and forth. What if it sounds like this? And he was like, he actually had her record the song. Like, not just there to, but when we fully recorded it, he's like, I want her voice on it.
I'm sitting here like,
you're a big, this dude who's like, I don't like women country. And now you're going to push for her to sing your male song, whatever you want. So that's the thing that happens, is you get so intimately connected to the song and who's singing it and what makes you feel, that you typically, it doesn't matter what it is, it just, it comes out the way that it starts. But to answer your question, if we've had veterans who said, I'm just a huge Christian, devout Christian. I want Christian music.
Okay.
I find a writer with, like, we have a writer that has like 3 Grammys in Christian music and another one has like 18 number ones in Christian music. And then if they say, obviously they like country, we have all the types of country. We had the bassist for Three Doors Down wrote with a veteran last go through. We have the guitarist for Taking Back Sunday who writes us sometimes. So yeah, it runs the gambit. We could usually find someone who fits that wheelhouse, but that's a question we ask them before they come out here.
This way you have it ready. You're ready to go.
Yep.
Yeah. It's amazing. So when a veteran gets to you, just so people can kind of understand the process a little bit, they apply. Okay. You decide we're going to have them come down to Nashville. All expenses paid. We get them. We fly them down there. One of the most important things that I think that you do is you have another veteran meet them, correct? Whether it's yourself or somebody else, that battle buddy meets them so that you're right away, there's that comfort level.
Yeah. So they'll pair up with, even before they fly here, they have multiple conversations. Like we'll do now, we have more people. When it was just me, I actually wrote with the first like 85 veterans because we're still a rather small nonprofit. So they would apply. I would call them. I'd tell them my intimate story about being injured, losing my friend, what that felt like. They'd tell me what they went through. I'd be like, well, we're going to write a song about that. I'd help them craft that. I'd talk to them 2 or 3 times. I'd book their tickets. They fly out here. I would pick them up in my truck when they got here. We'd bro out for a little bit or girl out if it was a female veteran. And then we'd go out and listen to music that night and talk more about his song idea. And I'd pump him up with the writers. I'd be like, dude, tomorrow we're writing with this dude who wrote this number one or this chick who wrote this number one. And so it's that mix between just making them feel comfortable with me as a person and a battle buddy. And then I'm like, dude, don't worry, because I'm going to go in that writing session with you tomorrow. And I'm going to help you tell that story if you can't, or I'm just going to be there to fight back the songwriters if they try to do something stupid with the song. I got you. And so the next morning we go into the writing session, tell that story. And at the end of it, we come out with this amazing song. Then we go to a writer's round that night so they could see how they listen to music differently. Because once you've created a song in that process, you listen to music differently. And that's how it used to be, 3 days. Now it's 4 days and every veteran has, and we fly 5 veterans in at once and they all have, so there's 5 Richards, 5 mentors who call you beforehand and they're the ones that greet you and they're the ones that you hang out with. So you come as a group, we'll have group dinners, like the first night's family dinner, like we all are sitting around talking, then they break out with their mentors to do a writer's round. We have individual writer's rounds just for them where number one songwriters are telling stories and writing songs or singing songs that they've written. And then same thing, the next day they all go into like in March 6th when we had 5 veterans come to town for everything locked down. 5 veterans came backstage at the Opry and then 10 pro songwriters came back there and they all went into 5 rooms, came out with 5 songs. The next day we went to the recording studio and we recorded all 5 songs like in front of them with the session musicians and everything. It's pretty spectacular. And since COVID, we have a new in virtual rights, so people could still sign up for those. And it's the same exact experience, except for not in person. We do a Zoom call, and then you break out into your breakout rooms, and you still are sitting with those pro writers and that veteran telling your story. And then you still get to stream live that the recording studio. And then we do some songwriting classes in between, too. It's not as exciting, entertainment exciting, but it's just as impactful because we have veterans who surveyed just saying that it changed their life.
I'm sure it does. Yeah, okay, maybe a little bit of the glitz and glamour isn't there because you're not in Nashville. You're not face-to-face with that number one recording artist or number one songwriter. But you're going to get that benefit because you're still going through the process.
You still get the exact same song and process that you needed in your life. It's just not that physical connection, which is super important. But the most important part is getting that story out.
Yeah. So on the song side, we know where we can find the songs. You Spotify, there's playlists. You now can ask Alexa to listen to veteran music. It's going to go right to you guys, and you can listen. If I wanted to find one of your artists, if I wanted to see some of the artwork from past, not the gallery that's up on the virtual right now, how do I do that?
So we were never good in the beginning about, I was all focusing on programs, not on post stuff or pre stuff. I was just like, I'm going to save as many vendors as I can through this process. as we grew, that's when I started saying like, oh, wait a minute, we need to archive some of this stuff. We need to have it up on our website. We need to have these gallery spaces. We need to have physical gallery spaces, and we need to travel this thing around the country so other veterans can see it. So right now, those virtual galleries kind of do exist as our inventory. We have a bunch of photos, and we're trying to process a way that we could put them online that's not going to be overwhelming. Because right now, it'd be like going to an Instagram feed or a Pinterest feed or something where it's going to be so sporadic that it's not going to be helpful for anybody just to go there. So we're just like a museum would, we're curating it. So it's just showing the stuff that we have up there. And each time we have a new class or new gallery, we'll do the same thing, do the 3D walkthrough, and then replace it. So before there was actually, there's been two other galleries up before the ones that you see, and we try to cycle them out. But we do have here in Nashville, we have a physical location where the art's hanging. And in Chicago, we have a physical place where some of the art's hanging. And it's traveled around the country too. So we try to update people on where it's going to be via our socials. But because of COVID, again, it's kind of sitting around. Right, and then after a year though, we send it back to the veteran too. So again, just like the music, if they don't want us to have it or show it, we don't. Like, we have songs that nobody will ever hear because the veteran wrote them for them, not anybody else. And we'll never share that music. Art is the same way. A lot of them do not want it shown. It may be too intimate. They could show it for that, you know, the gallery space, but then they want to take it themselves. So each year we write back to the veteran and say, hey, we've had your art for a year now. We try to show it around. Do you want it back? Some people have gifted it to us just to keep showing, which has been awesome. And that's what we'll keep doing is growing that art collection.
Awesome. Now, I have to ask you, what do you do more now? The art side or the songwriting side? Because you started in the art side.
Yeah, I do the business side now. I actually never get, I mean, I never, never say never. I get it right every once in a while.
Okay.
But I used to write for myself a lot more, but because Creativex is expanding pretty rapidly and I find my days and nights just going to, how do I help every single veteran? How do I get in these homes? How do I expand the art program? How do I do this X, Y, Z? And then now 11-month-old. So I thoroughly enjoy having my son. That's my therapy now. Before that, I would have to, like,
okay,
I would come here super late at night to write a song, or I'd always have my guitar next to me just to play, even if I wasn't writing a song. But I definitely do music more just because it's more accessible to me, because I do ceramic sculpture. So I'm building out a kiln in this new space, because this new art facility in Nashville, if any veterans in Nashville, they can come in on, like, they can come in tomorrow and sign up for a songwriting session or a guitar lesson or a graphic design lesson or some of our water painting classes or anything, and we can start helping them instantly. And we're going to have a kiln out here, and we're going to do ceramics classes. And so once we get the art facility built out more, I'll actually probably be doing that more. But I enjoy them both so much. Writing songs now is my go-to because it's easy, but it'll soon hopefully be ceramics. I'd love to have my own, like, ceramic shop after this settles down, after, because right now it's almost like startup. Even though we've been around for 7 years, how fast we've been growing, it's like startup mode where it's like, okay, I'm hiring a few people every once in a while, some part-time, some full-time, some of this, trying to get these programs out there, trying the strategic partnerships. Now, where does our music go? How do we get the royalties back? So it's a lot of stuff right now, because music is, there is so much. We have 116 songs, but we can't even just put it out. It's technically, like, illegal just to put it out without consent from other songwriters. And so if you're not collecting royalties, if you have it up on YouTube. So we had to, like, get rid of our whole catalog. And that's why, if you've ever been a fan of, like, an independent artist and then they get signed by a label and you're like, hey, where'd all their music go? That's because the label is like, hey, you can't have this out technically. Right. And now you're under us. So we're going to make sure everything's by the book. And then they only release the songs that they can release. It's kind of, it's crazy.
Yeah. The business side has to be very difficult. It can,
yeah,
that cannot
all
be
the copyright easy. Law, all the yeah. sync licensing, all the just label copy and the union, because the musicians union, it's intense. It's like learning a whole new job.
I'm sure. And it's hard for me to even hear you talk about yourself as a startup, because, I mean, you've been in a Time Magazine documentary. You've been recognized by Time Magazine. You've been on Fox and Friends. You've been on a bunch of different news outlets and all of that. So when I see you as already kind of established. So it's very interesting to hear yourself talk about it as still a startup.
I feel like if I say I'm established, I'm going to slow down. It's a subconscious thing. I don't want to like feel like we got it all put together because the data changes all the time. I was actually just talking about this today with my program director and another guy who comes in and shoots video. And I was like, it's insane because each year something else happens. Like I was one of the first, President Bush had the Stand To Veteran Leadership Program. I was one of the first veterans selected from around the country to be a part of this like 6-month cohort, veteran leadership, learning all the statistics behind veteran mental health, behind veterans in college, about veterans getting jobs. And then we've had the partnership with the Opry. Then we partnered with Country Music Hall of Fame. Then we partnered with Big Machine Records to actually release our music. And at one point, so, and this is what blows my mind. When we released our song, July 3rd was the first song we ever released.
Okay.
I looked at my wife and I just said, we had the world's largest company, Amazon, with Alexa, and then the world's largest, well, at least the United States' largest independent record label, Big Machine Records, because Florida Georgia Line and Tim McGraw and Rascal Flatts and all the people, we had them to take our songs and put them out there. Like we are the reason that this we got them two to pair up and release our music.
You did this.
How crazy is that to think that such a small nonprofit could move these two giants to do something like that? And so, yeah, we were at that level where, but then I just said, well, what can we do next? And so I'm always thinking like that. And so if anybody's out there who is a businessman, entrepreneur or anything, never, I would never think of yourself as settled because it's going to make you complacent. It's going to make you not be innovated and looking forward. So I do that to keep up because I do feel like every day I feel like when we have some stuff that I can't talk about yet that makes me just feel that again because it's a whole new thing. Now we're running with this whole media outlet and this music and this stuff. So I'm kind of transitioning to a different role. It's tons of stuff happening.
Keep you busy, man. Keeps you real busy.
Yep.
And health-wise, how are you doing? Are you doing all right?
Doing great. I was like, it was ramping up for a while and I was not in a bad place, but I could feel myself. I'm emotional intelligent enough to know when I'm regressing a little bit. And I always think you always have to, PTS is one of those things that it's always going to be there. Even when you overcome it, there's still going to be a little hint of it there because if you go back into your old routines, it comes up. So the less you start talking to people again, the more you stay in your house. Like it's actually a going back to where PTS could catch up and you can start having anxieties again and depression again. So I'm a very avid believer in continuously doing the arts and the music. And there was a time where I was starting to get more irritated and I was getting a little bit more depressed and anxious without even knowing it. So I was like, oh crap, I need to get back into this. And so I would write more. But now with my son, I mean, he is my full-time therapy where I don't need to pick up a guitar and I could just go home and spend the day with him and setting a very strict routine to where I wake up every morning at 5 or right before 5 and I work out and I come home and I eat food. I have a little bit of silent time and then Barrett wakes up and my wife goes to work out and I just spend the first hour and a half with him, 2 hours, and then she gets on to go to work and we have a nanny coming. I just go to work and I work as hard as I can till 3:34. Go back home, spend that time with my family again. Then after 7 p.m., it's back to work. And so I'm not doing it to the point to where I'm overwhelmed because I have learned how to turn it off. I used to not be able to do that. But now with Barrett, I just reset it. And I'm just like, okay, I could. This is awesome. Then come out of it and all of a sudden work mode. Like here, we're talking at 8:41 at night. And then earlier I was just talking with Northeastern about a survey that we're doing. And this is all like night work that I have to do, but I was fully reset when I just spent the last 3 hours with my son.
Yeah. We just, before I came down to talk to you, we were sitting with my daughter and getting her ready for bed and doing the, our normal routine. We're kind of similar, very regimented with kind of timing stuff. And, hey, we're going to sit and we lit a fire. The three of us are on the couch. Play around a little bit, run around a little bit. Okay, now settle and get her ready for bed. And it's like the same thing pretty much every night, but you'd think it would get old, like almost Groundhog's Day, but it doesn't get old because seeing her happy when the three of us are snuggled up on the couch and the dog comes up and it makes her laugh just makes me laugh and I love it.
Oh, yeah. And it's like you feel like it's almost a different laugh or smile every time. So you get your camera out. Then you look back at your camera. I'm like, I have so many photos of him just doing the same smile, but I'm just so captivated by it each time.
Oh, for sure, man. for sure. It's the best, and it only gets better. I know you're kind of new to it like me, but from everybody that I talk to, it only gets better. So you have a lot to look forward to. So how do people find you? Where do they go if they want to apply, if they want to listen, if they want more information?
Yeah, it's all creativevets.org, which is for those out there listening and not seeing it. You just spell out creative and then you add a TS to the end of it. So there's not two V's. Some people will do that where they two separate words. One word, I was trying to be a creative vet when I made this word. So just search creativevets.org, but all social medias is even more up to date. You can find like our music in the gallery online on the website, but you'll see everything on our social medias because we're consistently posting new songs, a lot of veteran highlights from their art, and just day-to-day stuff. We're more active, I think, on Instagram than Facebook. And we're even starting a TikTok. We're trying to get that out there on TikTok to get our music to the veterans again, any way we can get to them to show them what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely want to highlight the fact that you do have those live stream classes on YouTube, Facebook, all of that. And there's kind of a back catalog now of these classes, and there's a schedule.
That's the beautiful thing. So we took about a month off of the live streaming as we reset and grow with our music, and then we're going to go right back to it. But we have Creative Vets podcast too, but the live streaming, we had a number one songwriter. He wrote a George Jones number one a long time ago, and he's a Navy veteran. He taught 2 days a week for a good 5 months, and it's all on YouTube, and we have it as one little category. So if you go to a Creative Vets YouTube and you want to learn songwriting, that's the place to do it. Even though he was live on Twitch, he could still, and you see him talking to people, he still goes in depth to songwriting stuff that you have to pay for, because he actually stood up and taught at Belmont University for 20 years, the songwriting program. So that's where all the top songwriters go. So he built that program. So you can go there for free and listen to that music and learn songwriting.
Yeah. There's so many ways that you can get involved with what you're doing, whether it's applying, whether it's just listening, or whether it's taking advantage of these live streams. You're giving people a lot of options, and the more options people have, the better chance they are that somebody is going to benefit from it.
Yeah,
I'm a firm believer in that. Listen, Richard, I've kept you around for about an hour, and I could listen to you talk for a while, but we both probably need a little bit of sleep.
Yes, sir.
Because we both wake up early in the morning. But I really do appreciate you coming on. I've had a blast talking to you. I love hearing your story. One thing I did forget to ask you, and before you go, which president did you serve under?
It was George W. Bush.
You were George W. Bush. I was at Andrews during when Bush got went through his inauguration. Clinton was leaving, and then I was there. I was at Andrews until 2002, so halfway through his first term.
Yeah.
So got to see him a couple times, Cheney a couple times. We used to have a gag of sending a very young, straight out of basic training airman into the Air Force One hangar for vehicle maintenance and see if they would get themselves in any type of trouble. And usually, you know, they pee their pants a little bit when they get nervous. So that was our little gag that we would do. But I had to ask you that before we ended. Again, I appreciate it. I appreciate what you're doing. Keep doing it, because you're helping so many people.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on here.
Awesome, man. You have a great night, okay?
You too.
Again, thank you so much to Richard for coming on the show and sharing everything that Creative Vets is doing for the veteran community. You could just tell how much he loves what he's doing by how he talks about it. I mean, I'm sure he's running in 10,000 different directions with as quickly as they're expanding, but how he talks about how he's just trying to keep it fresh and that he's never really finished. And you can just hear it in his voice when he talks about bringing veterans down to Nashville or getting them hooked up with the Art Institute in Chicago or USC in San Diego. It's amazing, and I love hearing it, and I love that they're doing things like the art classes and songwriting classes that everybody can take advantage of. So if you feel like you don't qualify for the program, but you still want to learn songwriting or you want to learn art, you can go to their YouTube page, you can go to Facebook, and see these amazing people teach classes, you're getting it for free. So please take advantage of that. Head on over to the Creative Vets website. See everything that they got going on over there. Make sure you take a look at the virtual tour of the two art galleries. It will blow your mind, the stuff that they're putting out. And get on over to the YouTube page, and you can see the EP that they did and all the different songs. Okay, that's what I did. And I just started clicking through the songs and listening to them. They're awesome. And the videos up there are awesome. So please, you know, support these guys. Go over there and see what they are doing, because I'm telling you, you're going to get hooked right away. And remember, the 20th of every month, you are going to see a new song coming out. So be on the lookout for that. You can use Alexa and ask to listen to veteran music. So however you want to get that music into you, Spotify, whatever, Apple, you know, Apple iTunes, please check these guys out. They're doing great things, and the songs are awesome. I'm telling you, check out that one, Unbroken. Just a great song. I really, really enjoyed that one. So I think that's about it for this week. We're going to have another great interview for you next week. But in the meantime, I hope everybody's staying safe out there. Stay happy, healthy. If you need help, if you need anything, please reach out. Reach out to a friend. And if you can't get somebody, you can always email me and contact me. I'm always around, and I'm always willing to help out. If somebody is in need, let us know. And we want to make sure that people are getting the support that they deserve. And the veteran community is always looking out for each other. So please, don't ever feel like you're alone. Reach out, get the help you need, okay? I'm going to leave you with that. So for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, my name is Jason, and thank you for your service.